welcome back to Dragon Readers. I'm Nora, this is M.
Hello.
This is the podcast about Christopher Paolini's Inheritance Cycle. We are continuing our reading of Brisinger, which is part three of the series. And it's been a good time.
We have to roll it back a bit. We missed an important thing last time.
Yes.
And you remembered, and then I remembered that you remembered. And I was like, oh, we got to make sure we talk about Aragorn's sicko assassin mother.
That's right.
Because at some point it's brought up that his mother was not some, like, lady of court who was, like... I feel like Aragorn's sense of the thing is that she's like, oh, she was tricked into being the wife of an evil man. But apparently she was like the fucking silent wet works guy for what's his face?
What
I don't remember that guy's name. Yeah. I never remember that guy's name. Doesn't matter. He's dead. Unless he's not, in which case that's going to be really weird. There's no resolution on that. I assume we'll get that next book when whatever stupid final twist awaits us is delivered to us. There's got to be something. I feel like so far everything's been like really like straightforward to the point where I'm like, I feel like there's a swerve here.
Uh-huh. I think that the next episode we record is going to be really interesting.
Okay. Okay. Anyway, yeah. That was the only thing we missed from last time.
Well, I mean, Selena's fucking wild. She killed those guys by healing them, by saying the word heal to remove their, like, ability to, like, feel antipathy toward her, and so she could just walk up and kill them.
Right, I forgot about that. She has, like, intense healing powers that she can use for evil. It's so stupid. This is like someone's edgy DeviantArt OC.
Also, her nickname was the Black Hand, and the spy organization Galbatorix is using right now is using that name to try and like ride on the coattails of her infamy.
Do we know for a fact that she's dead? I thought it was assumed, but.
I don't think we've heard that from anyone who would know.
Okay.
But I feel like it's assumed that she's dead.
Okay. What if she's Galbatorix? Here's the thing is, we've not seen Galbatorix once. There's no actual conception of Galbatorix yet, to me.
That's true.
Galbatorix could not be real. Like, I would, like, that's the level of, like, twist I feel like this book could be cooking up.
Yeah, it could.
I don't know what it could be, but there's clearly something going on.
Damn it. I was trying to look up a dream sequence from this reading on the wiki, and I could not find it quick enough. So we're not going to worry about that at this particular moment. I actually have a paper copy of the book right now. So.
Oh, wow. Couldn't
be
me.
I got it from the library.
My EPUB copy was the first three books, so I had to track down a copy of book four just the other day to make sure I had it.
So tell me about Aragorn's dwarf adventures.
So Aragorn is sent to oversee the choosing of the next king because they need that to hurry up and happen because they need more reinforcements. The Varden are stretched very thin. And so he goes on his own because they don't want to send Saphira because if Galbatorix's forces think that the camp is unguarded, they might attack. So they leave Saphira there with the mage guy, the catman, whose name I never remember. And he's just like hitting whenever like she goes up in the morning. He like puts a like weird water shape of Aragorn who climbs onto her back and she flies away. And then she comes back in that shape, runs in the tent, and everyone pretends Aragorn's still there doing missions. And she's bored and tired. Anyway, he goes to the Dwarven. He goes to Oryk, meets Oryk's wife. Oryk's like, yeah, we got this whole thing on. Nasuata made him promise that if Oryk seemed like he wasn't going to be the front runner for king, that he would throw his weight behind a more likely candidate because they really just need to get a king that is sympathetic to the Varden. Mm-hmm. And like an idiot, like a beautiful, earnest idiot. He tells Orc this on like day two.
Yeah.
And Orc's like, look, Aragorn, I understand that you humans don't have any sense of honor because you're all garbage people, but I need you to fucking trust me. And like an idiot, Aragorn's like, well, okay, I swear to you, I'll also trust you. Because Aragorn knows no other path than promise things to people.
It's true. He's gotten, just as Angela predicted in book one, his fate is tied and bound to so many people.
Yeah. Anyway, they head to Farthendor, and it's a lot of meetings between the dwarves where Aragorn is just a... Look, Aragorn's been through, like, Jedi training. He should not be, like, openly yawning and falling asleep at the fucking dwarven council. I feel like this is cartoonishly overwrought for Aragorn.
It's a little much.
Yeah. Anyway, they're all split. There's a couple different people who want the, you know, the head. It's like people who think that all of the Varden are evil. It's Oryx faction who are very pro Varden. There's one lady who could kind of go either way, who just seems to have the hots for Aragorn. That's her whole deal.
Mm-hmm.
Aragorn goes and walks around like, I'm just going to go, you know, take a stroll, and gets jumped by some of the assassins from those guys. Whose name I do not remember, and I couldn't pronounce it if I could.
As Sweldenruck Anuin.
Yes, exactly, those guys. The ones who swore to always destroy the riders or whatever. There's a sick battle in the tunnels of the city that is interrupted as one of the dwarves hits like a magical dwarven lantern, which fucking explodes and like blows them all up, which is very cool. AoE attack.
Yeah, this is why I tweeted that sort of famous vine about the kid who, like, in the pillow fight, who smashes the light.
I don't know this vine.
Oh, well.
And I didn't see this tweet.
That's the video.
I believe
he
you.
Hits it
okay.
with the pillow.
Anyway, he goes and tells Oryk. Oryk's like, okay, I got my men on it. They go and start using enhanced interrogation techniques on dwarves. They specifically say we broke their minds, as they trace back the assassins and find out that it was in fact that group that swore vengeance on, the riders or whatever. And Oryk brings that to council. Aragorn spends the night in the house of the mother of the person who died saving him, like his little guide. And he goes and sees this woman, and they're like deep down below, like these dwarven Amish folk, basically, who never come up where the sun is. They're just like this sort of like, oh, they are like culturally regressed. They live the old ways down deep below in the earth. Mm-hmm. And she has a nice little, she basically has Yoda's hut. I swear to God, it's just Dagobah hut. And Aragorn's very moved by her like religious observance. Then she has everyone in and serves them all meals and like forces herself to laugh and tell stories in the old ways. And Aragorn's like, but I could see her pain. It's like, yeah, no shit. That's the whole point. Anyway, next morning, the big council, Oryk uses the fact that one of the clans tried to assassinate the rider, which goes against all dwarven conceptions of hospitality, to get those guys, the evil guy, the guys who swore vengeance, whose name I don't remember, their whole clan expelled, or until the point where their leader steps down and a leader that will apologize and change their ways takes over. And they just all like turn away as that guy is like ignored out of the chamber. Devastating. Never recovering. Oryk makes a big call for a vote on the king and barely clinches it because that lady who has the hots for Aragorn votes for Oryk.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know if that'll come up again. It doesn't in this rating, but that's what happens. He then gets, because this, he's already like contacted. He's like, oh, we need to send Saphira, because Saphira is going to come once it's like, sees like it's going to be settled, because she needs to be there for the coronation. Also, there's the promise where she's going to restore the big fucking rose. Isildur Mithrim. That's what it
is.
Right. So she, there's like multiple chapters of Saphira just being bored in like first person narration. We'll come back to this because I think it's interesting and weird. Mm-hmm. But she's really excited to see Aragorn. They basically like glomp each other in the halls of the Dwarven King.
Yeah.
And it's ridiculous. And then she, as her gift to the king, repairs the rose, and it's even better than before, and everyone's delighted. And then during Oryk's coronation, they summon the like ghost of their god, the dwarven god, to come and to come and challenge Auric, ask him questions, see if he's worthy. And apparently found him worthy. And Aragorn is deeply confused because as far as he's known, gods aren't real. r/atheism rules. But that certainly was something that came down. But not like something... Obviously, like, they don't just summon God to fight their wars for them. They still got to go and do stuff. He's never seen their God intervene, but there was a weird thing that showed up. And he doesn't quite know what that is. And Sphere's like, I don't know what it is either. It's not like normal. It's not like an illusion or anything. Something was there.
Yeah.
And that's the Aragorn stuff. Rohan gets sent on a bunch of missions with increasingly inept commanders. In what I can only describe as the most ham-fisted pastiche of like World War One stories you've ever seen. This is Chris at maybe his worst writing that we've seen so far. Because it's just like, I'm the leader of this battalion and I think we have to do it by the letter of the law. And Rohan's like, it'll get all our men killed. And he's like, no, I say we must do it this way. And if you disagree, it's insubordination. He's like, oh, I'm going to protect the men. And then he does and saves everyone and saves the day. And then he's thrown into the stockade to be brought back to Nasawada to answer for his insolence. And you're just like, this is so boring and rote. They're not a real army. The whole point of the World War One fucking narrative is the officers are the old world. Like, they went through officer school back when it was like horses charging at each other, and all they knew was tactics of horses charging at each other, all a bunch of fucking minor lords, sons of minor lords. They're assholes who don't know anything. And they're thrown into a situation where they're charging their horses at fucking machine guns and trenches, and it decimates half the population of Europe. It's a disaster. But that only happens when you're a real state. The Varden are not a state. The Varden are the scrappy rebels. They're not going to put these assholes in charge of anybody. It doesn't make any goddamn sense.
Yeah.
Nasawada's not an idiot.
No.
So none of this, like it's kind of cool because like you do get Rohan killing like 190 people in like one engagement. It's like absolutely absurd.
He's literally standing on top of a mountain of corpses of the people he's killed in this fight.
Yes.
Just being like, come on, I've still got my hammer. Let's go.
Yeah, they run afoul of more of the guys who can't feel pain. It's just a disaster. But Rohan does really well, and all the men will follow him into hell. He's very popular. So I assume when they get back, he's going to get punished and then given a command, because that's how these stories always work.
You mean he's not going to get hanged like anyone else would for insubordination?
No, I think they're going to like throw him in jail for about 6 days, and then they're going to put him in charge of some guys.
Okay, interesting.
I think that might be everything that happens.
There's one other note. Aragorn.
Two other things is Aragorn loses his sword again. He needs a legendary named sword for the end of the book.
Yeah, obviously.
And also, now that the king is coronated, the dwarves supposedly are going to march to join the Varden. But Saphira and Aragorn got permission to go to Ellesmere to finish their training. You know the bit where Luke shows up at the beginning of Return of the Jedi and Yoda's like, no more training do you need. It's going to be that. I know it's going to be that.
Yeah, of course. but the returning will be the fulfillment of one of the seven promises of Aragorn. Shadeslayer and Saphira Bjartschooler.
It's really weird because the book does not frame this as like a real thing at all. This is all a conception of the fucking marketing. There's no prophecy that Aragorn has to fulfill seven promises. That's just the name of the book.
That's true.
This is like when they named the book The Two Towers and everyone's like, oh, what does it mean? What does it signify? And Tolkien's like, I don't know. They just picked that name. You can pick whichever one you want. I don't care. It's probably Minas Morgul and Orthanc, but I don't know.
There's a dream sequence here.
Yeah.
Where Aragorn needs a sword and he goes to Horst, the Carvajal blacksmith.
Yes.
Who turns him away and says, I don't have time to make you a sword. And then, where's your mother? Where's your father? And then a mysterious figure bursts into the room and says, I am his father.
Oh, right. Yeah. I forgot about that.
But weird note, we get some eye colors here that don't necessarily match Morzan's eyes.
I'm gonna be perfectly honest with you. This would not have stuck in my brain at all because I don't ever give a shit about what color anybody's eyes are ever.
The eye colors in this book are so important, though.
I just didn't grow up with this kind of DeviantArt nonsense. I don't care.
Well,
who in the cast has heterochromia? I'm sure someone
Morzan.
Does. Okay.
That's it. It's just of Morzan. Course.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I remember the important eye colors.
Yeah.
Which you are read this Aragorn when you were a teen. And Arya mostly.
You read this when you were a teen. That makes total sense to me.
I thought, you know, when I was younger, I thought eye color would be a bigger deal in life.
Yeah. Turns out nobody gives a shit.
It's true.
I barely know what my eye color is, much less anyone I know.
If you put a gun to my head, I have only an 80% chance of guessing Autumn's eye color in this moment right now.
Yeah, that's how it goes. So clearly he's going to go to Ellesmere, and there he's going to find underneath the roots of the tree some sort of ancient metal that he's going to take to the lady who promised to never forge a sword again. She's going to forge him a named sword for the rest of the books.
That's a startlingly specific prediction there.
Well, because I've read a book before. And they said last time, a great need underneath the tree. You will find a weapon. And he spent this entire book looking for a fucking weapon.
Oh. Do you remember the rest of that prophecy?
No, absolutely not.
About the...
I think something about him is going to fall in love with someone.
Yes, it was predicted he would fall in love with someone of noble birth.
Oh, okay. Well, Arya, we already did that one.
And that's gone great. Yeah. Also, there's that stuff about the Rock of Kuthien and the Vault of Souls.
Right. Vault of Souls just makes you think of Aragorn going through the past of the dead, and I really hope that that's not what we're doing here.
It's not.
If he's got to recruit a bunch of pirate ghosts to help him out, I'm going to be like, man, this book really fell off.
That would be funny, but I think our pirate days are over.
Okay.
Yeah, there's some other stuff, but there's no need to bring it up to the forefront just yet.
Katrina said she's going to leave when the baby's born.
Yes. She's going to leave the, like, camp and go to a city with, like, people.
Yeah, she's like, I can't raise a baby on a battlefield. It's bad for the baby. Like, you can come with me or you can be noble. I'm not going to, like, leave you. Like, it's not punishment, but I'm not raising a child here. Mm-hmm. Absolutely not.
I don't want our baby to be Ocelot.
Yeah.
Also, just to remind you, because we haven't brought this up in two books, Gertrude is still pregnant.
Oh, right. I forgot about that lady. She's the one who's going to, like, revenge herself on Aragorn, right?
No, that's... What's her name? Gertrude, I believe, is Sloane's... No, Gertrude is the healer.
Right. Okay.
I forget exactly. She's either, like, Sloane's wife or the healer. I forget exactly. But she's been pregnant since before the first book started, and it has been over a year.
Oh, I did not realize that. That's very funny. Is that just Chris messing up, or is that like, okay.
That's just Chris not paying attention to tiny details like that.
Because I fully believe this book is taking place over about 4 weeks. It doesn't seem like it's been very long. There was one other thing I was going to say. Aragorn travels to the dwarves with one of the,
Hell yeah.
What are those guys' names? I can't fucking remember.
It's Nargarjvog.
The orc guys. I don't remember what they're called.
The Urgles. Urgralgra, as they call themselves.
That sequence is like... racially charged, I would say, but I mostly liked it. I think that those two's weird, like, bro friendship is very good. Also, that sequence is basically also the three runners going after Merry Pippin and Two Towers, which is one of my favorite parts of Lord of the Rings. And similarly, forges this bond between the two of them, I think, is just, like, really nice. There's a bit where they're, like, afraid of this giant wolf, and then Aragorn's like, oh, right, I can talk to animals, I'm an idiot, and then just tells the wolf, hey, we won't do any harm, and the wolf comes and eats some of their meat, and the Urgle's, like, fucking... about to freak out and is chill, and they, you know, they camp together and talk about their childhoods, and it's good. It's fucking good. I love all that stuff.
Unfortunately, a third of their conversation is about how the Urgles are sort of racially predisposed towards violence.
Yeah, there's a bit where he goes, say the Varden, Aragorn goes, say the Varden win. We give you lands, you have them, you settle, but your society is built on conflict. Your women don't marry guy like men who haven't won three battles. So what happens when eventually you have to, you know, you fought all the battles among yourselves and you have to fight battles against humans again because there's no one left to fight. And it's just in your nature to expand your territory because you love combat. And he's like, well, I hope by then we have figured our shit out.
He also says we will hope that there are more Urgles across the sea or else all be gone.
Yes. Yes. Because he just sees the inevitable eradication of his people in Ellesmere, which is kind of fucked up, honestly. I think I feel like a little bit of border conflict between the Urgle nation and whoever's king at the end of this. It's probably not going to be Nastawato, but I don't know. Maybe it will be. That'd be nice. Could be dealt with without a genocide happening. I think it's normal for there to be a little bit of strife and people just live with it.
Yeah. I think that there's more than one option here.
Yes. Because Aragorn really pitches it as like, oh, if the Urgles ever overstep, we're just going to eradicate every single one. The women and the children, like Anakin Skywalker said.
Speaking of Anakin, there's that moment during the voting for King where Aragorn's like, ah, fuck. What should I do? Should I lock the doors and seize control of the Dwarven nation?
Yes. He pitches this to Oryk at some point. Oryk's like, don't you fucking dare.
That would ruin everything.
That would ruin everything. He's like, you can't throw in with someone else because if you're part of my family, so if you threw in with someone else, no one would ever believe in both you or me again. We'd both be seen as like unhonorable people who can't even keep their family in line. And if you try to seize power, if I tried to seize power, it wouldn't work. You can't seize power with the dwarves. They're dwarves. Don't you understand? Stubbornness is like our one character trait.
Yeah. I also like that Oryk has to be like, okay, so we have this piece of evidence. And Aragorn's like, oh, so you proved that it was... those guys. And he's like, no, we tracked it back to this place.
Yeah.
He's like, okay, so that's proof that it was those guys. No, well, that's not really proof. But along the way, we did find these guys and we broke their minds. And that's the proof.
Yeah.
But at every step, Aragorn's like, okay, good. That's, you know, you've convinced me. Oryk is like, no, we have to go through a process with evidence. I don't know if you know how law works.
Well, it's really weird because they have all the evidence, but then they also just have like this is like neutral parties, magicians read everybody's mind and go, oh yeah, that all checks out. it is mentioned when they read Aragorn's mind, he's like ready. He's like, if they fucking go anywhere, they shouldn't. I'll nuke them from orbit. But everyone's very afraid of him. So they're very polite about it. More things about Dwarven society. Every clan has a woman who runs all the finances of the entire clan.
Uh-huh.
And Oryx is his wife, who seems very cool. She seems very nice. I like her a lot. Yeah. I don't think she's ever getting anything to do, but I do appreciate that she exists.
I don't.
You know,
at
no point is it given conclusively whether dwarven women have beards in this. I assume not. I assume he'd mention it if they did, but dwarven women should have beards. I feel very strongly about this.
I don't know. My gut says no, they shouldn't. But
I think Chris believes that they do not.
Yeah.
Because I think he would have mentioned it by now.
I think if in Aragorn, dwarf women had beards, we would have heard about it at least three times in every book.
Yes. The thing about Oryk's wife is I just feel like she's like a Rosie Cotton type. right?
Yeah.
Like, she's just, like, Oryk's perfect wife who we've never met before, and she's just good at everything. She's the best person who's ever arranged anything, and now she's going to be the fucking, like, queen, and it's going to be great. Like, it's truly just going to solve everybody's problems immediately that Oryk's just got, is the best king, and he's got the best queen, and don't worry about it, because we've got too much shit to do, because we're running out of book, because this book only has one more section left, and we haven't even begun the real war yet.
So true. And let me tell you, we are going to begin the war in the next book. So
the other thing is during his big speech, when Oryk stands up and begins his like dissertation on why those guys definitely tried to kill Aragorn and we should fucking do something about it, he begins talking about dwarves coming into existence alongside the other races. He starts all the way back at the beginning of time. And mentions specifically the idea that it was wrong for dwarves to be left out of the pact with dragons to get magic. Mm-hmm. As if, maybe, by the end of this book, Aragorn will swear a new pact that brings dwarves into the fold with magic and dragons.
Hmm, interesting.
I'm just casting my lot in a predictive sense.
I mean, you could do a lot with the magic as presented in these books.
Yeah.
You can potentially create God? Question mark?
To which I go, if Aragorn brings dwarves into the pact and like unites the races, but doesn't do that to the Urgles, I'm going to become the Joker.
Oh, man.
I would say this is like less good reading for me than the last couple sections, but I totally enjoyed it. I was mad we had to stop. I could have read it. It went very quickly, and I was like, man, I just want to finish this fucking book.
Yeah, me too. especially because I listen at work where I'm just at stop and listen to something else. I guess go listen to Foundation for a novel.
Yeah, I finished this and went back to Earthsea. I'm working on Earthsea. I'm almost done. Mm-hmm. I think tomorrow I will finish the last Earthsea book, and then I will not be reading outside of this book any more fantasy novels for a while.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hoping to do some reading for fun that's not for a podcast. Not that this isn't fun. Don't get me wrong, but I would like to read some fiction that doesn't have magic or spacecraft in it once in my life.
Couldn't be me. there should be swords, or
no? I don't need any swords. I need someone with like some existential angst. Maybe someone's cheating on their spouse. Maybe someone's like, maybe I should quit my job.
What
you know,
about
just normal
all
fiction?
All of those things, but they have pointy ears.
Nope. No. I don't want any of that. Thank you.
Anything else to bring up? I don't think so. Aragorn really watches this lady grieve her son, and while she's praying, be like, how do you know God is real?
he does do that. He's the rudest boy sometimes.
It's like, there's some really vague mentions of like the people from Carvajal having superstitions and like traditions, especially around like funerals and weddings, and yet Aragorn has never heard of like faith in any context.
Yeah, it's really weird.
It's how you know that Chris was the other kind of homeschooled.
Yes. Absolutely.
But yeah, I had a moment when I was rereading this where I heard the description of the dwarf god. I've forgotten. Gunterra, I believe. And the description, before it like fills in with like the fact that it looks kind of humanoid and has like a beard and everything, just from like the description of the proportions, I had a moment where I thought Christopher was going to put in some aliens and have some like gray ass alien be the dwarf god. But
that would be weird. I don't think I'd like that here. I think it would upset the soup a little bit, but
yeah.
I aesthetically, I'm not like against it. It's weird. 'Cause like they almost describe this, like this god is like a weird little troll man, like a, well, I guess he's giant, but he's like an enormous, like, just like a brute, just like a big, like, he's just like a fucking League of Legends character to me. Just like a weird, like ogre guy.
He's Trundle.
Yeah.
That's a League of Legends character.
No, I believe you. I believe you. I'm going to look him up and I'm going to go, yeah, let me see. I look at Trundle and I get the definition of the word Trundle. Oh, yeah, something like this. Absolutely. And it's just weird that the dwarf god looks like that, but okay, sure. I don't hate it.
Oh, I forgot they changed Trundle's default to be frost. He used to be just kind of gross. Also, they mentioned that Urgles and dwarves both have seven toes, but humans and elves have 10 or have five on each
foot. And sometimes dwarves have seven fingers.
Sometimes.
Sometimes.
There's not any other Paolini book where seven is important, is there? I can't think of any.
Oh, is that, I don't actually remember seven being important in that book. I believe that it was.
Yeah, because the Ranaui have seven tentacles.
Oh, okay.
I believe.
Okay. Well, just like eye color, I'm not a real numerology person. I just don't retain shit like that.
But he asked if Urgles and dwarves are related, and whoever he's talking to gets, like, mad about it. Like, hell no.
I think he's talking to the Urgle guy.
I think so.
Because he takes his boots off when they're camping, and he's like, oh, you've got seven toes. That's fucking weird.
I forgot we had the Urgle feet moment.
I've never seen Urgle feet before. And he's like, well, get a load of these.
One toe for each day of the week.
Yep.
Yeah. Is that it for our third episode of Brisinger Chat?
I guess I'm just thinking of why did he do seven toes? Why is that a thing Chris thought was, like, worth doing? Because, like, he's not into the evolutionary biology of the races enough to be like, it gives them XYZ traits. And he's not Tolkien, where, like, he's going to talk about, like, oh, they have, like, a base 14 number system because of their number of digits. You know, like, humans like base 10 because we can fucking count our hands. Mm-hmm. Tolkien did say the elves use base 12. Not that the elves have six fingers, but he did always mention that elves count in 12s and not 10s. It's just a thing I remember from back in the day.
You know who else counts in 12s?
Who?
Huts.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Huts have like three fingers, right? Hut hand.
Hut feet.
They don't have feet. I know this. Yeah. Okay. He's got four. He's got three fingers and a thumb, looks like.
Yeah, because oh, so
you know what I'm seeing? I'm seeing two different types of Jabba hands. One has three fingers and a thumb, and one looks like it has two fingers and a thumb. But that picture might just be bad. But
is this not true? I thought it was true. Who knows?
Because there's this Black Series Hasbro Jabba the Hutt figure where he just got Ninja Turtle hands, where he's got the two big fingers and the thumb. Mm-hmm. The other ones have, like, three fingers and a thumb.
In Phantom Menace, he has three fingers and a thumb.
I'm going to trust Phantom Menace over some figures. I'm going to be honest with you.
I can't tell. It looks like in Return he has... I think he has three fingers and a thumb. No?
Phantom Menace is G-Canon.
He's got two fingers and a thumb in Return of the Jedi, it looks like. Huh.
Interesting.
I could be interpreting this image, but
no one's going to be happy if you ask me who I think takes precedence, Phantom Menace or Return of the Jedi, because I'm definitely going to pick Phantom Menace. Sorry.
Yeah, me too.
But if you have some more information about why Hutts have the number of fingers they do, write in.
Or just if I was correct. I think it's true that Hutts count in base 12, because I remember a bit in some book about Hutts semi-routinely getting one over on people by counting differently.
Okay.
But I gotta tell you, I can smell the soup that Autumn's cooking for dinner, so if you are done talking about Brisinger, I am done talking about Brisinger.
You're like, shut the fuck up, I have to go eat. And fair enough, I guess. You can find me on Twitter at @em_being. You can find all my podcasts at abnormalmapping.com. We're going to have a abnormal mapping that's either out today if you're listening to the Patreon feed, or came out last week if you're listening to the free feed. assuming you get this out immediately, tomorrow, I assume, about Dynamite Heady and Beyond Oasis, which is very good. Listen to me and Neve talk about sagas on Around the Longfire. We're reading Mort d'Arthur, where some knights are homosexuals in that book. It's pretty good. And you can listen to me or watch me and Dia play My Summer Vacation 2 on Dia's YouTube channel, youtube.com/@DiaLucina, which is a very great game about a small boy running around rural Japan in the 70s. It's fucking incredible.
You can find me on any, not any social media site, but the big ones.
What's your Masto instance?
I mean, I made a Mastodon account in 2017. That lasted about a week. At Skull Daughter, at the various places. Find stuff I've done at norblake.online. Support the Export Audio Patreon, exportaud.io. You might be there right now listening to this, in which case, thank you. Please consider giving us an extra dollar just for me. We are still moving toward getting Fisty back up. I am reading Fist of the North Star. Not right now, but, you know, I'm halfway through the next volume, so that'll be coming out soon. And, you know, other stuff's coming. I really would like to get back to watching movies for podcasts again, so maybe we can get something like that going. You and I, of course, will be watching a movie in another couple months.
Yeah. I'm excited. I'll probably fucking hate it, but I'm excited.
But I wanted to ask the audience, if you have emails to send in about Aragorn, and eldest Brisinger inheritance, etc. When we do watch that movie, I'd also like to take emails, questions, etc. Maybe do sort of a bucket of them if we can.
Just send them. What's the email address again?
exportaudiopodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah. And since you've read them all, you don't even need to worry about it. So you can just file them away. I won't see them. So.
Yeah. So send those emails in if you, what's it called? What's the mind control phrase from BioShock?
Would you kindly? Yes.
Would you kindly email the podcast? We have one email already from my wonderful wife, specifically about the Mort d'Arthur and Aragorn.
Oh. Okay,
that's interesting. Those are more connected than I thought.
I can't see how.
She's holding up two fingers really close together.
I don't understand how.
You will soon enough.
Okay.
I think that's it for the podcast.
All right.
Maybe you're... Oh, my voice. May your sword stay sharp. I had to make sure my voice sounded good when I said the really cool line.
Yeah, no, that's important.